Welcome back to Bibliosinensis. I am on my lunch break, and I'm doing an unhinged episode again, due to the fact that Steph is at Cove Arts and Wellness. It's her new business. it's a proud moment for T-Spectral. We have a venue where you guys can actually join us for paint and sip nights and board games and brew and basically tea lessons with activities. It's a wonderful oasis within Cove. It's at Canoga Park, and it's between Steph and her business partners, Stacy and Kelly, and they basically are offering a place, a safe space to do yoga, Pilates, writing spaces, and it's in a very unsuspecting space, venue, in Canoga Park around Sherman Way. Now, for those that don't know anything about Los Angeles's, I guess, diverse geography, Canoga Park is within the San Fernando Valley and is on this side of the San Fernando Valley where it's not really pretty. But it has a lot of opportunity. Ironically, it's this diverse area where you can get Indian, Persian, Filipino, Japanese food everywhere. And you see a lot of these small businesses flourishing. It's amazing. It feels like North Hollywood in the 90s. It wasn't pretty to look at, but there was theater everywhere. And so I guess we're taking opportunity over this wonderful venture where people want to, you know, drink tea, play board games, paint, Pilates, yoga. I'm just repeating myself here. But on the weekends, after work, between classes, you know, because Pierce College is nearby. Woodland Hills is a college town that's like, 10 minutes away? And it's wonderful. I would have never expected it from Canoga Park. You know, this place is what you would consider an industrial area. The aerospace facilities that help with building parts for NASA are there. Train stations everywhere. Fabric shops and metalwork type of businesses. They're all there. They're all there. It's a pretty construction-esque type of town. So if you could, we would love your support. Our calendar has currently shifted. I mean, we've been promoting it while we were at the markets. So you can visit at covearts and wellness.com, or just follow Steph, you know, the T Hontier on Instagram, and they'll update you. We're going to keep talking about it because it's pretty fun. Our first wine, you know, paint and sip night was just amazing. We got loud. We got paint all over us. We didn't know we could actually paint. We're not doing paint by number. Steph is actually teaching these lessons where you can learn how to blend. You can learn how to play with your brush. And you can learn a lot of things that I guess people don't know about painting. I don't know. I took art classes when I was a kid, so to me, I always thought everybody knew what, you know, strokes were, what we call knives, what we call blending. Like, really? What? What? Anyways, here I am talking all, you know, by myself. Just trying to actually help you guys understand that Steph is on a new venture. And I'm really proud of her. I'm excited. She's excited. She's tired, I'm sure. But when you start a new business, it's kind of like that, you know? And, you know, I'm kind of like left to kind of do my thing on the daily. I'm like watching movies. Well, more like listening to movies. You ever do that? You go right ahead and just drive and you know, if you're done with your audiobooks, you kind of play like Netflix. And it just is like the same lull that you have when you're just like sleeping to Netflix. It's kind of like that, I guess, when you're driving to it. Anyways, I was on Hoopla watching Bestsellers with Michael Caine, and I felt attacked. Basically, it's this author that has been asked to, you know, publish his next book after like decades of not publishing, just to save this one publishing company of, you know, of whom had the pleasure of having the daughter take over. And just all the drudgery of promoting a book, grassroots or you know, shoestring budget, whatever it was guerrilla marketing. And I felt that, and I felt, you know, sad that I haven't done that for a lot of my authors. And the whole COVID thing really just messed up the whole vibe of promoting books the way that I was used to, which was to go to a venue, have the venue, you know, have the books ready, and be able to have the author speak before the local readers. And I had to really depend a lot on their personal circle of friends. And as nice as that is, it defeats the whole purpose of why you have a publisher work for you. You know, as an author, why wouldn't you go, you know, self-publishing at that point? You know, the publishing house isn't really doing much. You can just put everything on, you know, on demand and see your pockets fill up, you know? Like, it ain't hard to get coin after that. So I guess the only thing I can kind of say here is I want to talk about what an author should consider, because as a publisher, I know that we have a place, and I know a lot of self-publishers out there are about to become publishers too, if not, you know, already. And for those that have already, I hope you did okay. I hope you're still working. I'm hoping that, you know, this whole COVID thing didn't stop you. You know, for a lot of us, it's actually helped us with our careers, with our hopes to earn better, you know, on our day jobs. But that doesn't mean that people that started out their business during the pandemic made out okay, because I'm pretty sure the pandemic helped you earn lots of money and gave you lots of opportunity. But now that it's gone, those exact same resources are not going to be available to you. But I guess to actually help boost any issues that new authors might have, I want to just clarify some things, just to kind of like give you a one-on-one lesson about what to consider if you're going to publish with a publisher. So one is obviously royalties. A lot of people consider J.K. Rowling as the dream of what a published author would be. And as nice as that is, she was kind of an anomaly. She wrote a children's book. Children's books don't sell that well. And all of a sudden, she did. She did. It worked. And along the way, her writing got better. I know there are Harry Potter fans out there that, you know, that will tell me that the first book was wonderful. And I'm like, you know what? It was charming. It's charming. It is not that well written. She wrote better as, you know, she kept pushing out more and more more and more books. Each volume got better and better. But the first one was not that great, guys. Like, please, come on, admit this already. I'll forgive you. But nevertheless, traditional publishers give you 7% at best with royalties. At best, commonly probably 4%, and sadly, less sometimes. It's terrible. It's dreadful. But that's only because they can promise you the world. They can promise you that they have, you know, distributions internationally. They can translate your books. They have made sales in the past that actually justified that percentage. And that they have a full staff and all these wonderful things, you know, like they can create merchandise off of your book. But for those that weren't found by an extraordinary agent or editor, you're going to get that same percentage from publishers that don't have as much access to all those wonderful tidbits. I know here in Hollywood, we have publishers that can promise you that it will be a movie someday. In fact, December is usually when we do all of our stock buying for books international to be here in the American market so that we can make movies off of these wonderful novels. And, you know, if you're like a Hank Green where you were able to self-publish books and, you know, made it to mainstream media, creating wonderful movies, good for you. Good for you. We need more of that. We need more of you, if possible. But I know it's hard to market. This is why I became a publisher. I knew that there are people out there that don't know how to maneuver around the readership community. And when you meet readers, you know, you jump from one genre to the next, to the next, to the next, because you just crave, you know, this complex palette that you're building. You're not gonna be a romantic reader forever. If you're like a diehard reader in the community, you know you're not just reading romance. I know there's a huge market for that. God knows Harlequin novels are practically just copied and pasted with like different names and places. And they sell like candy. They sell so well. But not everybody wants to write romance, you know? And we're not all like Stephen King, where he just pumps out novels like it's, you know, a 9-to-5. But nevertheless, I just want to actually help you guys maneuver. I want you guys to have a sense of understanding of what you're coming into. In the early 2000s, I was there when everyone was starting to self-publish. I was there when we started to petition for certain genres to be available online, because, you know, PayPal has their crazy policies. And there came a point where even erotica was starting to become, you know, a problem in the self-publishing industry. And we didn't see any reason for that. So, obviously, we all pushed. And we pushed and shoved. And we all started to scatter into our conventions, where if we don't distribute our books, how can they actually sue us for making even for even printing fan fiction? You know, it was a big deal. Huge deal. It was like almost the same exact debate that we would have at every convention for the next 5 years after 2003? Yeah, I think it was 2003. After 2003, it was the biggest debate ever. Piracy was a problem, etc. You know the story, I'm sure. But of course, those that did, you know, progress as authors, they turned into publishers. And publishing was, you know, a necessity, actually. Like, some of us were forced into it because we were paying these editors, we were paying these marketers, and we were not getting our money back. So we, you know, started to get into tax deductibilities and, you know, try to make compensations worth our while, you know? Like, come on. Like, how many times are you going to go to a convention and pay, like, $15 just for parking and then not get it validated or have to worry about buying more books in print and, you know, look for a space for it? It's like, at that point, you really are a business. You're a business. So, I guess, in lieu of this venture, authors have come to me, and they do have questions, and I didn't think they even concerned themselves with these questions, but I'm just going to go right ahead and give you guys a down low. I guess the second point I want to make is a lot of the publishers are not giving advances. I'm impressed by that. I give advances to authors I choose, mainly the ones I invite, because obviously they're going to be my investment. Not all of us can take up more than one author a year. That's painstaking because we have so many authors, we have so many writers. Why shouldn't we take more than one? And I'm just going to let you know that it is very expensive just to produce one book. Forget the editors, forget the translators, forget the Braille version, forget, let's see, what other versions are there? Like, the illustrated versions, the non-illustrated versions, the hardbacks, the tradebacks, pocketbooks. I love pocketbooks so much. I really do. They're fantastic. But nevertheless, the expenses of them to be produced is insane. And before you go right ahead and stop me there and say, hey, you have all these print houses that could actually distribute your books on demand and they'll take care of everything for you, I'm just going to remind everyone that Etsy takes like about even 10% sometimes from your own profits or more. And people are conditioned to be okay with that. But in the real, like, professional world, you should make like over 25% of your profit back. You really should. And you shouldn't be paying anything to some of these people. I don't know how to explain this. Because everybody has been conditioned that everything is a subscription. Everything is you know, requires their due. But I'm telling you right now that a majority of this stuff, if you are willing to put your back to it, which a lot of us publishers do, we have to. Otherwise, we won't see it. You could literally make the typical, you know, spend 75%, make 25% profit margin a reality. Because that's the golden rule, okay? Like, we throw our money into all these projects. Do we make 100% back? Not right away. But we hope to actually make that profit first so that everything else feels like it's just passive income. It feels like that. But it's literally supposed to make enough so that you can start employing people. And oh, the steps, guys. But it's going to be worth it. You're going to have a physical copy, and you want to make sales at the local shops. That is where you get your money back. That is where your advance, you know, is justified, because once your advance has actually been paid off, which is basically they take a percentage of your royalties and give it to you ahead of time, which is what an advance is. So suppose that they expect to make $5,000 off of your first season's worth of books. They could go right ahead and say, hey, I'll give you, I don't know, $1,000 for an advance. And once I make $1,000 back as a publisher, we could go right ahead and have your royalties kick in. And whatever that percentage was, it reaches that amount. And you just sit back and relax. Wait for the, you know, your tax form to kind of come in and just earn that money. Sometimes, though, please understand, this is not a 9-to-5 job. You are going to be earning your money, all your royalties, at the end of the year. Now, there are those publishing houses that actually give the royalties quarterly. And then there was me, where I actually began and just kind of gave my royalties literally like whenever we made enough money when I started out. Don't do that. Please don't do that. It literally slowed down my publishing house, and I spent more than I should have. So now I have to kind of wait and build up capital again. Just to help the other authors I've actually signed up. I've signed in. So what's going to occur is once you have your books available, you're going to have to ask the publishing house for free copies. These copies are for you. You can give them to friends. You can even host your own sightings where people have to pay. And yeah, you can make money on your own without the publisher even actually taking a percentage off of you. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. Now, the last part I want you to know is that the editor actually takes a percentage off of your royalty as the author. They don't take it from the publisher. And some publishers are sneaky enough to actually be your editor. So try to figure that one out. You know, you can get an editor on your own and actually credit them, have your own, your own agreement with them, relieve the publisher of that problem, and, or you could ask the publisher and basically sit down with them, because the contract is more like a guideline that you could edit before it's actually solidified. So don't sign anything until you made your demands. You know, just don't. It's, you have that power. And yes, there are other authors. There's that pressure that, ooh, he might find someone else. But do you understand there are also tons of publishers now? So you both have choices. You don't have to be stuck with each other. Because really, you know, if you've ever been in a relation with an author-publisher relationship, it starts feeling like you're dating each other, and dude, unless you're down for a bromance, it's not gonna work well unless you guys work well. So yeah, there's this analogy where Beauty and the Beast is literally what it feels like to be an author. Belle is an author, Beast is a publisher, and he like bangs on your door demanding for deadlines to be met, blah blah blah. It's not wrong. So beyond that, do understand that when you are published to read the contract over how many rights you've given your publisher, you know, to produce anything, everything. Because nowadays you actually could just give them partial rights, guys. You're like an article writer now, you know? You don't really have to actually give them rights forever to everything. It's quite normal for authors to leave publishers. I'm going to let you know, it's going to be a lot of money because obviously people love lawsuits over intellectual property. It's intellectual property. It makes money. It really does. You know, it's going to make films. It's going to make toys. It can make like resorts, like Disney does that all the time. So just be open-minded to what's available to you. As an author, you have so much to work with, but you have to have the book. You have to have it written so your publisher, editor can actually work with you over what to keep, what to move, what to change, just to make it marketable. So I hope that this is helpful. Watching bestsellers really dug deep into, you know, my conscience as a publisher. I tend to assign editors to my authors because I need that bridge to kind of be filtered. Because I'm handling, like, about, what, six authors now? I'm a small press. I'm just going to say that. I'm a small press. And it feels good. It feels right. Because I feel more like a manager than an agent. when it comes down to offers. And for those that aren't actors in Hollywood, I'm sorry, I'm trying to do my best to do, you know, speak to a layman listener. You know, in Hollywood, there are managers and there are agents, and actors actually hope to have a manager, which they usually do. Not all managers are great, but they get managers because they're personal with them. They'll talk to them, and they will only have, like, probably five people at best to actually take care of. So, obviously, you will be taken care of. An agent will have, like, 100 people, and the only reason why you rely on them is because they can manage 100 people, and they can actually make all that, you know, all that work, but you never feel like you're their only client, unlike a manager. So, it's been an adventure for me, dealing with that, and it's been weird because I'm used to working with filmmakers who are excited to talk about their films whenever I produce fan film awards. But when you deal with authors, you forget that they're introverts. They're great talents, but are they good orators? Are they good communicators? Do they like people at all? And that in itself has been a wonderful challenge. It's, I can't say it's like raising a child, but it's like raising a child. So, I'm looking forward to finally opening an online bookstore. I'll talk about that sometime soon. And I just want everybody to know that as authors, as writers, as artists, you guys have a place to, you know, hang out and actually be creative. And Steph right now has that going on. So check them out. CoveArtsAndWellness.com. And hopefully we can catch you there. See ya.